Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
Sandeep Bali is here in the studio today. I am really excited about this because I feel like I've known you virtually,
yes,
Sandeep.
Yes, likewise.
Through the news and things and through your appearances and your quotations, but I've never actually met you in person, and so welcome.
Thank you.
For city council again.
Yes, I'm running for city council again.
What district are you in?
District 3.
What do you notice about your district, or as you're canvassing, what are the kinds of issues that your neighbors are spotting for you?
Then there are so many issues that have come online since I've been running. Like, I've been running this campaign for a year now. And, you know, initially it was just like the homeless crisis, which is still number one for a lot of Portlanders. You know, just like, why has nothing been done? Why are we still dealing with such an issue? But then we also talk about taxes, how high our taxes are in the city, and what are Portlanders getting back for that, right? And then we've talked about new issues, which is education. We have the lowest educational standard in the nation. And it's like, why do we have the lowest educational standard in the nation?
Well, I don't think we do have any standards, do we?
We actually don't. We got rid of our proficiency exams. Yes, yes.
I mean, they still take them, but you don't need them to graduate.
Right, which is a disservice.
Or to move ahead, even, yes, really. Which, they just push you through, at least in Portland public schools, they push you through.
Yes, and I wasn't even aware of this until I started campaigning, and then I would talk to...
Was that 2 years ago?
This time.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was out in the Brentwood-Darling area. They had like a little get-together close to a school, and I was just talking to some of the teachers there, and that was one of the things that came up, is like, students don't have proficiency exams. And I was just like, you know, that's not good, because that holds back students of, you know, every student. If they're just passing you, you're not really getting a baseline education to be competitively, you know, globally competitive, which is shame on us.
Yeah, I think it's a real concern for most parents. Mm-hmm. Who have children in school, and they want... Terrence Hayes talks about this. Like, he's running for city council in District 1. They want to have... people want to have benchmarks. They need benchmarks.
Yes.
To succeed. And his argument... And now people can't see you, but you're... Are you Indian?
I'm Indian.
Of Indian descent?
Yes.
And so, I mean, at least the argument for removing these standards was that it would help people of color succeed in school.
Yes.
And so what is your position on this as a person of color?
I think it's like absolute BS.
In sum.
Said politely, you know.
And it was said politely. With a smile, yeah.
But I'm just like, you know, for me, I've talked about this too. It's like, I've failed a proficiency exam once upon a time when I was in high school. And it was just, you know, I wasn't paying attention.
I think we've all been.
You know, just having a good time. And then you get that kind of scolding. And it's like, you're not going to pass the benchmark, like you said. And I studied all summer and I passed. And it's like, you just move forward. And I think having that mindset that this is what, like, I've been really talking about this is like this progressive mindset that always says, like, if you're a person of color, you're going to be held back. The system's, you know, after you, and you won't make it. And, like, it just is really cynical.
Yeah, what does that say,
you know,
about
what
people
that?
Of color?
Right. It almost says, like, to me, you know, I'm going to be actually, like, talking about this week. And it's just, like, this awakening that I had where it was, like, I believed just from like society, from people talking to me, from like progressive far left people, especially in Portland, that I'm a victim of society, right? So I'm gay, I'm an immigrant, I'm a person of color.
Are you first generation?
I am first generation.
Wow.
Yeah, I was born in India, and then my parents migrated here when we were about 8 months old. My brother and I were twins. Yeah. And so very difficult to do that, to, like, you know, leave your country and come to another country and then raise your kids here and be immersed in two different cultures. That's been, like, my whole life. So,
wow.
Yeah. And for my parents, you know, they're obviously persons of color, Indian descent, and they've worked very hard to be where they are now, and they're very successful, and they worked very hard to make sure my brother and I got educated.
What did they do when they came? I mean, they came over unemployed.
That's a great question. That's a great question. So we lived in Berkeley in Oakland for like 4 years. My parents actually just like worked at a video store first that was run by my dad's brother, and then moved to Reno, and my mom was a housekeeper.
And you've got a really fantastic sweatshirt on that says Reno, Nevada, which I love and adore.
Thank you. At my work, we always say, like, Wednesdays we wear pink.
It's a fantastic so it's girls like, reference.
So on Wednesdays, we all try to wear pink.
And you're a pharmacist.
I'm a pharmacist, yeah. So we have, like, a nice team of people there. And my parents always pushed education. It was, like, number one in our house. And I think for a lot of people of color, it's, like, they push education and they want their kids to be educated because they don't want them to be held back in society. They want them to have that free tool that you can take and become whatever you want to be, right?
Did you grow up in Reno?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what was that like?
It was actually really nice.
Really?
I went to the University of Nevada, Reno. I went to high school there. And it was fantastic just having like Lake Tahoe so close by. It
well,
was,
that's true.
You know, just like 45 minutes from my parents' house. Yeah.
I don't think people realize that. They just think like dingy casinos and stuff, but there's a lot of natural beauty there.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's we grew up just like, you know, when we could go out up to Tahoe, you know, swimming, the beaches. There's like even little secret beaches up there.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, that whole region is like a desert, high desert style of Pacific Northwest. The hiking trails, the amount of outdoor sports and things, it's sort of unlimited.
And I mean, if we really look at it right now, I go back to Reno all the time, and not enough, but it's a lot of our Portland businesses have moved to Reno.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so like Sizzle Pie is there, Pine Street Biscuits is there.
Really?
Yeah, and there's even
that's
some
that's where
like,
they're, you mean they've opened branches there, or that's where they moved their headquarters?
They've moved, as far as I know, I think they've moved their branches there. They might have moved their headquarters there because they're a little bit more business friendly.
Wow.
So it's very interesting. So it's kind of turning into like a little Portland there, but more common sense, and we're seeing a lot of people move there too, which
yes,
is interesting. Yeah,
I know some people who've moved there and they're very happy about it.
Yes, yeah, I mean, they have a really good educational standard.
Do they really?
Yeah,
in Reno.
Yeah, yeah, it's surprising because a lot of people think, like, you know, it's just a trashy town or Reno 911.
I love that show. Dangle.
Yes.
Officer Dangle.
Yes, exactly. That's what comes up in everyone's head, you know? And I love that it was filmed there, too.
I do, too.
But it was a nice place. It was a nice place for me, but I'm glad that I'm in Portland, and I want to stay in Portland, but sometimes the policies and the standard of living and just, like, everything combined makes it really difficult to continue down that path.
What did your parents end up doing for living in Reno?
So right now, my mom, she has her own gas station. I think, you know, my father is always kind of like, if you're going to be just chilling at home, you're going to, you know, get into trouble. So he opened her a gas station, a Quick Mart, literally called Quick Mart. And
those are extremely lucrative, I've heard.
Yes, they are. They are. It's a lot of work. I mean, my mom, she's...
It's so much work.
She's 76, and she goes to work every day. And it's like, I talk to her, and she's just like, I am tired.
And if everybody's sick, she's it.
Yes.
She's doing everything.
Yes. She's literally, like, ordering. She's working. She's dealing with the employees.
And
she's
it's constant
doing it
issues
all.
Because it's the kind of job where people are in and out. So you're dealing with a population that's in and out. You've got some old timers that maybe you can count on. If you do, you're really, really lucky. I know somebody who owns a couple gas stations, and it's just constantly. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with like flammable material. I mean, there's so many layers to those.
Yeah, theft. There's like employee theft. Like yeah. Customer
when you
theft.
Think of robberies, you know, a lot of people we think of can automatically think of convenience stores, which mm-hmm. is really scary for your mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a very strong woman. She's like not afraid of anything, which I think I take.
She must not be. She comes over here with kids.
Yes.
You know, they're unemployed.
Yeah.
And yes, they have family, but they've got to figure out how to make their way.
Yeah.
And that's so brave. Why do they decide to come to America? Do you know? Your parents?
I've asked them this question, and they're like, we wanted you guys to have a better life than we did. Like, you know, they lived okay in India. It was fine. But they were like, we want you to have a better life than we did. And in America, there will be opportunities for you. There will be opportunities for us to, you know, start with nothing and work very hard and produce something.
And in India, is it still harder to move around in regard to class status?
Yes, I would say it is. I mean, I haven't been back in a while, but from what I can see, even now, it's like it's very class oriented. So,
and obviously that history and tradition is there for
it's there
thousands of years,
it's
really.
There,
whereas
yeah.
here, this country was built on, I mean, people would say colonized, which sure, correct, but built on the idea of just coming here, figuring it out.
Yes. I mean, we were, I mean, you know, we say colonized, which I'm like, whatever.
Why are you like, whatever?
It's just like, so, and it's like, I get, you know, obviously it was a bad time in our history, but every single culture in the world has experienced that.
Yeah,
and what
true.
Are you going to do about it? I mean, India was colonized by the Brits, right?
Spain.
Right. Spain, it's like Mexico, all of that. Yeah. And it's like, what is each culture going to say? You know,
right.
It's like, you just kind of realize
Canada.
That this was part of your history and you got something out of it. And it was tumultuous, but, you know, there are good things and there are bad things.
So, Sandeep, when you're canvassing, do you experience any kind of reticence from people you talk to? Because from chatter class people, as I would call them, like people who know that maybe you're more on the, I guess they would say, the conservative side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider yourself a conservative?
I consider myself moderate. But I am more of like, you know, like the labeling, I always hate it. Like,
why are you framed as a conservative? Are you a Republican? Is that why people say that?
If it is out in the public and we can talk about it, yeah, I am a Republican.
Okay,
yeah.
So do people, in Portland, I can imagine the questions being, and when I told people you were coming on, I got a lot of these questions like, Republican, it's difficult for people in Portland to see past that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you break through that? I mean, you and I feel like the minute you walked in here, we had a rapport.
Yes.
Clearly, you're fun, you're interesting, you're smart. I think so. Maybe with your personality, I mean, you're a lot like Tiffany Penson to me, nothing if not likable. So maybe it's that way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that are you able to sort of in person break down those barriers if they've
Absolutely.
Have some kind of preconceived notion?
Absolutely. I mean, there are, you know, of course there's like the, I always say like the hard left, and I hate just like categorizing everybody and their political backgrounds. But
I know. It's always an overgeneralization.
Right. And it's just like so difficult, right? So
Everybody's different,
but I run into people that are like the hard left that just, you know, if they find out that I'm moderate or conservative, or if they sniff common sense in my policies, they're like, we don't want to talk to you. And I'm just like, that's fine. Like, I don't mind, you know, but are you happy with what's happening in Portland? Are you happy with the highest crime rates? Are you happy with cars being broken into? Are you happy with the highest taxes in the nation?
Yeah, and I think most aren't.
Right.
I think some would say we are and we don't care. We're happy in Portland, and they find some way to be happy regardless of those things. But those aren't their issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're focused on things like being in a state that they know is reliably going to go for a Democratic president, or they're focused on abortion, or they're focused on other things, maybe.
Yes, yeah.
But I think most Portlanders are concerned about what you just listed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think majority of Portlanders are worried about that.
And yeah, I do too.
When you bring common sense to these people that don't want to hear it, you just have to accept it and just be like, okay, that's fine. But I know one day when your house gets robbed or your car gets broken into and there aren't police available, you're going to wonder what's going on.
Do you ever get questions like, because I got these questions for you. I mean, you must be so sick of it. But do you ever get questions like, and Ben West in Clackamas, who's been on the show, he gets the same kind of questions. Like, if you're, how it seems inconsistent to people, I think a lot of people living in Portland, that you're a gay Republican. I mean, they would consider that an oxymoron.
Right. Yes.
And so what do you say to that?
You know, I am a Republican based on policy. Like, that
in
is my name, my main thing. And just like basically everything that I've talked about, I think like this is all Republican
really?
Policy. Yes.
Because I think this is Democrat policy. I really do. I think that things like education and crime mm-hmm. and those issues are old Democratic issues. Like, I'm talking like Joe Biden crime bill issues, mm-hmm. early 90s Clinton presidency kind of issues, mm-hmm. and even Barack Obama presidency. I mean, I think Obama, his presidency almost looks conservative mm-hmm. compared to the way I think Portland, I think there's no other way to get around it if we're going to have to, because we're going to have to break up demographics for voting groups. But if we're talking about far left Portlanders, which is really, I mean, I would say Portland is probably the most left wing place on the planet,
yes.
in my opinion.
Yeah.
So if we're going to go, which is so interesting that you're here
yeah.
and that you're a politician, like despite all of it.
Yes.
You're just like, I will persist. I
yes.
will run again.
Yes.
And to be clear, city council is a nonpartisan position. Like, none
exactly.
of this, should enter in there. Nobody's going to see what party you're in, but for Portlanders, it's just important. They're just used to it, asking
yes.
those kinds of questions and using them as a litmus test, I think. And so I think you have to, as a Republican, you have to grapple with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so interesting to me, though, how far, I think the perception is far left. The Democrats seem to have swung, I think, is the at
yeah,
least the perception.
I mean, I
think
say,
in the legislature here
yes.
in the state, certainly true, I think. Portland certainly... Generally, the perception of Portland is certainly true, but I think most Portlanders
mm-hmm.
are pretty, I don't think that they're far anything. I think they're pretty reasonable. If anything, they're center left, I think.
Yes, definitely.
But I look back on that era and I just think, gosh, when did things like crime and education get taken from the, we ceded it.
Yeah.
And we staked our claim on things like climate and abortion
mm-hmm.
and just hung on to that bone
mm-hmm.
while I think a lot of the others sort of went out the window.
Yes, a lot. That's
and,
actually...
And we're really, I think, intelligently capitalized on by conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, hey, that's fine. We'll pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pick up that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll say we're the party of education. We'll say we're the party of education standards.
Yeah.
We'll say that we're the party of criminal justice in terms of looking at it from a lens of the victim
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the perpetrator.
Right. And that's, you know, my big awakening in Portland. It was just like this moment. Number one, my partner, he's great. I was just talking about this and he's so good at just like asking me questions and just being like, well, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about this? And I had this moment where, you know, like I was saying, like I had this like little mentality that I'm a person of color, I'm an immigrant, I'm a victim, which, you know, just
when
like...
When was this?
This was 2 years ago when I ran.
Really?
Yeah, it was right before I ran that he actually was just like, you should run for office. And, you know, he said, like, baby, you should run for office.
So cute.
And I was just like, you know,
That's
I was just
sweet.
Like... All right, you know, like, I'm going to give it a try, and it's hella scary to do.
Yes.
It's hella scary to do, but having somebody just be like,
especially
you know,
here, because
yeah.
you're countercultural.
Yes.
You
yeah.
don't look countercultural. You look like you would fit right, you like you would. No, like, you do fit right in here
right.
visually.
Yes. Yeah. But my policies...
You're a lot more put together, I would say, than, I mean, most Portlanders.
Yes,
I feel a lot more comfortable looking a lot less put together.
I know.
I love how you dress. I love it. It's one of the things I notice the most. Like, I just, quick detour here. I know this is not part of your platform, but I just appreciate a put together person. And I think it shows care and consideration and professionalism.
Thank you.
And you're always put together. You're nothing if not put together and personable. Now I know these things about you. I mean, I knew them already, but now I really do. And I loved the, there was an article, a number of articles about a forum for your district, for District 3 in the, at Clinton Street Theater.
Uh-huh.
And your outfit was amazing.
Thank you.
That was one of the first things I noticed.
Thank
you. I know we're not supposed to be focused on that, but it's true.
You know what? I am a very...
And you have amazing nails.
Thank you. Thank you. This is part of just like the campaign while it started. I'm a gardener. And
oh, wow.
Yes,
that must be difficult.
I'm a gardener
maintain.
And I love to garden.
Do you wear gloves? You must wear gloves.
I wear gloves, but it's like the nails just get jacked. And
yeah,
so,
they would.
One of my good friends, she does nails and she's very artistic. So she's been doing my nails since the beginning of the campaign.
Oh,
and
so
I
nice.
Just I just love it. It's just something nice, self-care for myself.
So in 2020, are you saying at some point you were a Democrat?
I was a full Democrat, yeah. I have been Democrat my entire life.
You switched parties
I
in 2020
parties.
And then you ran for office
yes.
in Portland, Oregon?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I was a Democrat my whole life until, you know, just like a chain of events kind of went down.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
just couldn't
agree
with
it. Like when the city was
it.
On fire,
when the
mean?
City was on fire, and I worked downtown. At a pharmacy that was just like blown
Are
up.
Are you still there?
They closed that pharmacy down.
Yeah, of course
they did.
It was
just like, you know, there were
just
things
like
involved
so many
with
other
it.
Things,
yeah.
Though.
But I still work for the same company and I still, you know, do my care for my patients. But just now I'm in District 4 and like on Northwest 23rd.
Okay.
Which I love as well. It was always my dream to kind of end up there. I actually interned there when I was in pharmacy
oh,
school.
That's a
so my
story.
Boss,
Good.
He was my preceptor. Thank you. Thank you.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's my little Portland story. And that's all of these things combined is what took me to where I am.
I think you are very brave and very authentic because if you asked me, and yes, full disclosure, I mean, people listen to the show know this, but. Yes, I'm a Democrat, but if you asked me, not because I'm a Democrat, not because I want you to think the way I think, but if you had said, I want to run for office, and by the way, I just feel the need to re-register myself as a Republican to change party affiliations, I think I would say, please don't do that if
mm-hmm.
you're going to run for office here.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
You're going to make things so much harder on yourself.
Yes, yeah.
It's going to be so difficult, mm-hmm. But you must have known that.
Yes, and I had these conversations like with so many people, and you know, I've had friends that you know were kind of related to high political families, and so those
yeah.
friends would call me and be like, "Just don't do it. Like, it's just going to be easier for if you stay a Democrat." And I just was like, "I don't associate with like I can't relate to them anymore because." Honestly, I'm tired of being called a person of color.
What
I'm
about registering as an independent,
gay.
Though? Why wouldn't you do that?
So this is like also part of the journey, right? So
yeah.
my partner was an independent. And the last election, I think it was when we had like Christine Drazen, Betsy
yes.
Johnson, and Tina Kotek running.
Right.
So
Betsy
you know,
was running as
Betsy
an independent.
Was running as
for
independent.
People who don't remember from here, Christine Drazen was running as a Republican.
Yes.
And Tina Kotek, who ultimately became our governor, which seemed to be a foregone conclusion,
mm-hmm.
as much headway as Drazen and Betsy, I think, ended up doing, is the Democrat and is our governor.
Yes, she's our governor. At that time, we got our voters pamphlet, and, you know, mine was Republican at that time. I had switched over because I wanted to vote for Christine in the primary. I really
oh,
liked
I see.
Her message. I really liked what she did. And I was like, this seems like the correct path for Portland. Like, she wants to end homelessness. She's a mother. She's talking about education. She's talking about endless taxes on the middle class. And it's like, I can relate to that. You know, I'm not a mother, but I can relate to having my niece and nephew in the city and wanting more for them. And so I switched over for the primary to Republican because I wanted to support her. I also was in her commercial. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was fun. It was an experience. But when we got the independent ballot, it was empty. Yes. There's just, like, nobody on there. Well, it would
be because there's closed primaries here.
Yes,
which is, it's a real problem, and neither party, maybe you can work on your party to bring this through, because we need it so bad. I mean, I understand why neither party wants it, but I actually think it would help Republicans immensely if we had open primaries.
I have been saying that during that
time. I don't think
time.
It would hurt them.
Yeah.
I don't know where that's coming from. They should let that go, I think. I think it would give them a chance to get out in front of Democrats in a way that they haven't been able to do before.
Mm-hmm. And I think just logically thinking, like, you know, for me as a candidate, having an open primary is actually really nice, because even though I'm a Republican doesn't mean, like, I'm going to vote for every single Republican.
Yeah,
even though you're
like
a Democrat doesn't mean you're going to vote for every single Democrat.
And I don't
Democrat.
Like the polarization. I think it would help break down a lot of that polarization.
Yes, it's like, vote for the candidate based on their policies that make most sense to you. Don't vote for them just based on, like, party. Don't vote for them because, you know, it's a woman, person of color. Like, don't do it. Like, listen to policies, listen to the person. It's not about party, and I think, you know, Will Lathrop talked about this, and I loved the way
he's running for attorney general.
Attorney general, and he kind of said, you know, you can tick the Democrat box one day, the Republican box the next day. We're not born with it. It's not in our genetics. It's like nothing that's, you know, this tangible thing. It's just a box that you tick.
Don't you think it's particularly difficult, though, in a Trump year, in a presidential election, to be a Republican? He's just so, I think he's the most polarizing president we've ever had.
He is.
And I know a lot of people love that. You know, they're energized by that. But that is risky.
I wish we had another candidate.
I think most people do.
I
think most Republicans and most Democrats are not thrilled.
Yes.
With their choices?
Yeah. I wish there was actually, like, a real common sense candidate that understood the people. And, like, both parties, I think, are just so involved in so much of, like, who has a moral high ground.
Yes.
And it's like, let's talk about policies. I want to hear policies. I don't want to hear about moral high ground. I don't want to hear about
culture wars.
That's what makes it really difficult, I think, to choose really who I'll even vote for president.
Well, you know, one issue that is policy oriented that I think a lot of people in Oregon, probably most people, actually, I think most people in the U.S. are concerned about, and I think it's popular, is access to abortion. And I think abortion's popular. Like, I just don't think these threats that we're hearing from Democrats, I actually haven't heard them from Republicans, but threats from Democrats about how there's some sort of national ban that's going to come down on abortion. I think that would be political suicide at the federal level.
Absolutely.
Certainly at any state level. We saw this in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%. And I think even there are, you know, some of the abortion laws that we're looking at across the nation. There are some that I think, you know, have room for change. And I'm not saying outlaw
abortion.
Well,
there are all, so many are extreme. I mean, we're extreme in the sense that there are no restrictions.
Right.
And Texas is extreme on the other end.
Yes, full restriction.
And I actually think most Americans are somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Probably even most Oregonians are more. Access should be
there absolutely.
But
as
it should
a
be
healthcare practitioner, I 100% like am for that. Like, there should be access. There should be, you know, counseling. You should be able to do what you want to do with your future, up to a point.
Well, and what's dumb, I think, is that nobody goes to the city of Portland for their abortion, and that's not the kind of policy that you're going to be making as a legislator for the city of Portland. But people in Portland are concerned about it. And I think in that governor race that you talked about, I think one of the reasons that Tina Kotek won is because Christine Drazen didn't say what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think had she said what you just said, which is, I think there should be access, or maybe even, I think you can do it. Being personally pro-life, I think you can do it.
Absolutely.
I think you can say, I'm personally pro-life, but I understand that most Americans think there should be access. And I want to uphold the will of Oregon voters.
Yes, absolutely.
And they've said there should be no restrictions. So I'm not going to lead on that issue. I'm going to let the Oregon voters decide, and they've decided it.
Yes, they have decided.
And I don't know. I don't know why she couldn't do it. I thought that was she should have been much clearer and on that. And
yes.
She could have made more headway. And instead, I think Tina Kotek went with the abortion issue and won pretty easily.
She went totally after it. Yes.
When Drazen stuck her pitchfork in that pro-life camp, yes. I just thought, okay, well, that's it.
I remember, like, I don't know if I sent her an email or I was talking to her campaign, but I was like, you guys need to come out with, like, a strong statement here, one that makes sense.
Yeah, stop equivocating.
They could not come out with, like, a strong statement. And, you know, I respect Christine, but that was her campaign.
I respect her, too, but I thought she wouldn't
make it if she... Yeah, she didn't have a solid foundation on that platform.
I think Will Lathrop comes closer. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think he's doing right as a Republican is he's got a office here in Portland. And the reality is you need Portland Metro. If you want to win state office, you do. It's our one populous city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not like Washington State. We're not like California. We're not like any of these other states where we have numerous cities. We've got one anchor city and that's it.
Yes, Portland.
Yeah, and so I think you have to appeal. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, Portland itself, because of urban growth boundaries, weirdly small population-wise, I think still under a million people, certainly with people leaving every year, it's getting smaller. But it's that metro area that I think you have to be concerned about if you're running for state office. And I think he's rightly concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he could be stronger on the pro-choice issue, and I've told him that, and he and I have talked on the show about it. But, you know, I do think he was stronger than Drazen in saying that it's not something he's going to lead on, in saying that he's going to uphold the law, which is no restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I know that on the eastern side of the state, that's probably a lot to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that'd be difficult to hear if you're a Republican
about
on the eastern side of Oregon.
Yeah.
And you want to hear a strong pro-life stance. But, the reality is, I think if you want some kind of state office in Oregon, and also just in regard to where people's heads are at in the U.S., it's going to be some variation of a it's on the continuum somewhere, but it's going to be pro-choice, don't you think?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, I think you have to be pro-choice. It's what makes sense. You know, you can't restrict people from having abortions. It's a very personal topic. And for me, you know, I've dispensed so many Plan Bs from the pharmacy, right? The day after, or I've even dispensed Misoprostol from the pharmacy, and I see, you know, when things don't turn out the way you want it to turn out, so you have to have an intervention pharmaceutically.
Well, and to be clear, can you explain to us, like, Plan B is not some sort of abortion mechanism, right?
No.
It keeps you from
getting pregnant. Well, so it prevents the egg from implanting into the endometrium.
Is that the same way that birth control works?
Birth control works the same way.
But that tricks your body into thinking you're pregnant, right?
Yes.
Which is, there's obviously a variation in that.
Yeah.
And birth control obviously is not, I mean, if you miss it, it's not going to save you later after the fact in the way that Plan B will.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's sold... I think Plan B has a, I think, not factual rap by further right conservatives that it's some kind of abortion pill.
No, it's not. I mean, if we're really talking about what an abortion pill would be, it'd be like Misoprostol, which, you know, causes the body to contract and basically... Expel what
any fetal fetus or fetal tissue or whatever, right?
Yes.
Whatever conception mechanism is going on at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's used for all sorts of things, right? I mean, I had an ectopic pregnancy. It's used for things like that too, which is that fetus can't survive, and that's really about. That's not about. I have also heard stuff from some of these far right conservatives about saving the baby, and there's no baby to be saved in those cases with ectopic pregnancy.
No, and you want to make sure that the mother is not going to be in pain.
Survive. It's about the mother.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's...
And the tube not bursting, because exactly. That's where the fetus is forming in a fallopian tube. It will never, ever survive.
Mm-mm. And it will just do so much damage to the mother.
And, I mean, in all probability, if we didn't have access to those kind of medical treatments, kill her.
Absolutely, 100%. And, you know, we hear about...
Do hemorrhaging, and, yeah.
I see so many cases of just, like, young women, older women, also that, you know, the fetus has stopped growing, right? So it's just...
It's just sitting there.
It's passed away, you know, for whatever reason.
It's got to be expelled.
It's got to be expelled. And misoprostol then comes in, and it's like, I'm glad we have that. I'm glad that science created that.
So do you end up, I know these are weird conversations to have for a city council position, but this is a reality in Portland. Do you end up having these conversations as you're canvassing?
Never. Maybe just in those little, you know, the 3 minutes you're at somebody's door, they're really all worried about the homeless situation, public safety. And
but you
just
can,
like,
talk fluently about those things.
Yeah, I talk about those all the time.
So when you talk about those things, then, I mean... Do people know that you are cast, and I guess not, I guess you are a conservative if you're a Republican. Do you identify as a conservative?
I identify more as a moderate candidate. Like, okay. I don't
as
even know,
centrist.
Like, yeah,
do
as
you
a
identify
centrist.
As a centrist?
Yeah, as a, like, I'm just so bad with the labels, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I'm a Democrat, and I think I identify more as a centrist. I would have said, I know a lot of people, I mean, I think a lot of people listening to this show would say I'm far right or far left, but I... And maybe that means we're doing something right. I don't know. You and I, cast as both.
Yeah.
Right? We're rejected by everybody. But I think that's where actually most people in the U.S. are at. I just think.
Yes.
And maybe they're a little further left right now, pushed that way, in my opinion, by Trump. Or maybe they're a little further right, pushed by Democrats, mm-hmm. And pushed by culture wars potentially on either side.
Yeah,
but they're somewhere near the middle, I think.
Yes,
most of the time, always.
I do believe this. I believe, like, most of the people that I have real life conversations with, like, we're having a conversation.
Yeah, I think that's true in Portland too.
They're very middle. They're very common sense. They're not, you know, far right. They're not far left. Although there are some more.
Sure.
But
that's
when they
Portland.
Come to policy. It's just like they want, you know, a better situation, a better environment to live in.
They want civility.
All. Civility, yeah. Really.
Yeah, they want the police to work. They want disabled people to be able to walk down sidewalks. Just a simple,
yes.
functional aspects of city life that we've always taken for granted until mm-hmm. recently, in my opinion.
Yeah, the potholes all over the city.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on?
So when you talk to people about these things, do you find that you're resonating? Are you putting signs up in yards? Are you getting traction through canvassing?
I am getting traction through canvassing, which has been great. The only thing that's been really difficult has been just people trying to move my signs,
yes,
and, like, move my yard signs. Yeah, we're in sign gate right now. We're in the middle of
it.
We
are.
And it's...
For some reason, and I don't hear... And maybe it's because... Well, I don't know why, but are you hearing about more far left-wing candidates like a Angelita Maria or a Nat West or somebody like that? Are you hearing about their signs being taken by more moderate or conservative voters? Because I'm not hearing that. I mean, first of all, we don't have a conservative populace here probably to do it. But... If they were so inclined. But second, it just seems like more of a phenomenon of centrist candidates.
Yes, or I would say even far left candidates. Yeah, like, far left candidates.
It seems like there's a far left contingent taking signs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I don't have any evidence that candidates are doing it, but take far left, I don't know, populace, or maybe they're coming outside of Portland. I mean, we know that when the city was on fire, a lot of those people from arrest records don't live here.
Right.
They were,
yes,
coming in from all over the place, but they were, you know, and burning down our city.
Yeah.
And they don't work here. But coming in and taking signs down because they want...
It's absurd.
To
it's
see
absolutely
more progressive.
Absurd.
But you know,
yeah,
what I will say, Sandeep? I have seen, gosh, we're out in East Portland a fair amount. My family is. And I have seen a lot of your signs out there.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
like, on the edge of your district.
Yeah.
A lot
of those people are, like, my... Those are, like, my people. honestly, because I, clearly. Like, the last time I ran, you know, I was out because I covered so much in Portland when I ran last time.
Right, because you were running at large.
I was, yes,
so you were running for a city. This is before we had geographic districts, which weren't in place until this election. Mm-hmm. So this would have been 2 years ago, and you were running against who? Dan Ryan, and was it?
AJ McCrary.
AJ McCrary.
Yes.
And I would say you were, would you agree with this, more to the right of Dan Ryan? AJ McCrary was more to the left.
Yes, I was, I would, I mean, I felt like at that time for me, I was more middle. Like Dan was maybe a little bit more left than he is now. I think maybe he's kind of changed a little
I
bit.
I thought he was too, but then the minute he got on council, you know, he got all that pressure to defund the police because right. he had done it.
Right.
And then he gets on council in 2020, and there's all this pressure to continue this defunding of the police, and he wouldn't do it. And his house is vandalized.
Right.
More than yes. seven times.
Yes, which is so scary.
Yes, so and scary. He, it's just, he's a gay man living there with HIV. I mean, he detailed this when he came on my show, and it was just so interesting because ostensibly all these people were defacing his home in the name of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And his spouse, who's gender fluid, is first generation immigrant like you.
Yeah.
And Dan's spouse is from Mexico.
Right.
So the whole thing was so tone deaf and insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
It really, to me, it sort of epitomizes what Portlanders don't want to see, what they're tired of.
Right. And I hope.
This sort of terrorism.
Yes. And I hope that, doesn't even that make we're sense. All talking about it. Right. I mean, with me.
Like,
you
it
know,
wouldn't anyway, because I think it's violence and terrorism and property yes. destruction. It's criminal behavior.
Yes.
It's criminal behavior in the name of some kind of social, allegedly social justice movement. But when you look at it, whether that is consistent with what they're arguing, it's not. We know it's not.
No.
Because Mingus Maps also did not vote to defund the police. And, you know, he voted to put body cameras on police officers. And at that city council meeting, he was called a race traitor by a white lady. I was at that meeting.
Right. It's usually like,
like what?
It's usually, I keep saying this.
Do we
like,
care about people of color? Or do we?
Or do we not, right? And that's what this topic has, I think, become an issue with, you know, sign gay. Because it's like, here I am a person
You're
of color.
You're a person of color.
I'm an immigrant and I'm gay.
Don't they want you to run
right.
for office?
Yes.
Isn't the idea to put people of color in
isn't
office?
Isn't it the whole idea to amplify my voice?
Yes, but obviously I think the election Mingus Maps and your candidacies show that that's not what people here care about. They,
right.
Or the far left, not people here. I think most people here care about your policies. And I think they resonate with
yes.
with most people, I think, because they are concerned about mm-hmm. homelessness and crime. And I think Mingus Maps's policies as a Portland commissioner at that time, I think he's further to the left now, in my opinion, but at that time, I think did resonate with the majority of Portlanders. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they do now, but I think that they certainly did then, squarely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they elected him. That's why they elected, I think, Dan Ryan and not AJ McCrary.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we can even go all the way back to like voting in Joanne Hardesty as well. Right. I think that
Talk
was
about
like
that.
The first. To me, I think that was when I was still kind of having my awakening
did
in politics.
Did you vote for her?
I did vote for her. Yeah,
believe
it or not.
Obviously, most people did.
Yeah, because I literally was doing the same thing that maybe a lot of people are doing now, and they should not. But at that time, I was going through the voter's pamphlet, and I was like, African-American woman, looks like she's a lesbian. We need to amplify her voice.
Which we know now is not, but yes.
We need to amplify her voice,
yeah, okay.
And I'm going to vote for her. And then it just turned out to be an absolute disaster
for
Portland.
It did turn out to be a disaster for Portland.
I mean, just an absolute disaster for Portland.
I think most Portlanders were ultimately, obviously, they regret that decision because mm-hmm. they did not reelect her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they voted for Rene Gonzalez because he was Mexican, is mm-hmm. Mexican. I think mm-hmm. they voted for him because they liked his policies and they woke up.
Yes.
I mean, I certainly did.
Yeah.
They woke up and were like, you know, I got to pay more attention to this outside of the voter's pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, I really need to know what people stand for as opposed to just reading this voter's pamphlet and looking at their picture and looking at endorsements and reading some kind of summary that actually, it turns out, doesn't tell me jack.
Right. Right. It if you look at their, you know, their Instagrams, their comments that they're making in public, how they portray themselves in their media, and you look past them being like a person of color or whatever label we want to put on them, or like, you know, a female person of color or a queer or whatever, let's move all those to the side and let's talk about policies. Then you really wake up and you see, like, this person believes that we should, you know, there's a candidate that believes that we should, like, self-defend ourselves and we don't need the police. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Like, was that AJ?
That's this race, Angelita Morello.
Is that what she has said?
Yeah, she's on TikTok, and I even kind of
I don't watch it because I don't want to have a stroke. But I
Yeah.
You know what I will say about her that from the stuff that I have watched, and I have watched it. I don't watch it consistently. But what I will say about Angelita is, I like a couple things about some of these more far left candidates. Like, one of them is, and I. Candace Avalos is another example. They seem authentic to me. What you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're getting if you vote for them. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're the best thing for Portland. I don't think they represent the majority. With this ranked choice voting system, I don't know that you'll be able to get me to say that they represent the majority, even if they get into office, because of how complicated and strange I think it is with this single transferable vote thing. And if anybody wants to dig into that, they can watch the episode of Northwest Fresh where Andy Chandler brought in James Eccles from the city and Tim Scott from the county to talk about ranked choice voting for over 2 hours. And at the end of it, I think I felt more scared than ever.
I did watch the episode. Yeah,
you've been on Andy's show, so you know the format. I mean, it's very, it's not... The questions are not given to people in advance, and it wasn't some sort of canned dog and pony show thing. Like, they were really trying to explain this to us,
mm-hmm.
and they let us ask any questions we wanted, which I thought were great. Great, and I thought they were amazing to come on and do that. And I really appreciate actually the city and the county for making them available and doing the kind of voter education that they're doing, because good Lord, we need it. But I don't know how much education is really going on around here.
I mean,
because it's certainly not something, I mean, I don't walk away from that and feel educated
confident.
In any way. I mean, I did to the extent that I felt, I don't know what you walked away from that feeling, but I felt like, okay, it's clear to me now that they've got this software and they're going to press a button until all 3 seats are filled.
Mm-hmm. And it still doesn't make sense
in every
to
district,
me.
Period.
It doesn't make none of it makes sense, because I'm like, how will I as a voter know? Like, I've made my 3, you know, my top 3, but, you know, the way that it's supposed to be, like, they start dropping out and your votes get transferred to somebody else.
Are you comfortable saying who you like?
For my district.
In your district.
So I
obviously you're ranking number one, of course.
I'm doing Kezia.
I like Kezia, too.
And Harrison.
I like Harrison, too.
Yeah. And, yeah, those are, like, my top choices right now. And we all have met, and we jive, and I like them. I like their policies. I absolutely love Kezia's policies, and I think Harrison is really level-headed.
Yeah, I think both of them are.
And Harrison, it's great that he has this, you know, this fabulous background in office, which I think is so
important. Oh, my gosh.
He's
one of the most overeducated people I've ever met in my life.
Yes, I mean, and he just is very articulate, and I think he understands, you know, government even more than I do, and that I don't mind saying that.
Understand,
you know,
government in a way that very few people do, I think.
Yeah, and so I'm looking forward, like, if the 3 of us do make District 3. Yeah, she does
too.
Just
from her experience.
Yeah. With officers and with public safety, and I believe she's in charge of
All she's done for years and years and decades.
Yeah.
Public service.
Yeah, I think she's absolutely great.
I think, in the way that her public service experience nails the areas that Portlanders are most concerned about, I think, which is public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And also just because, you know, the stats are that a lot of these people on the street are committing crimes, getting arrested. It overlaps with homelessness, which I think those are the top 2 issues.
Right. And then with homelessness.
Street homelessness. I think we need to be more specific. Like, we're not talking about couch surfers or women in shelters or families that are struggling to get back on their feet, that missed a rent payment, that, yes, need housing. I think most Portlanders are concerned about street homeless.
Yes, the people. Mental health issues and the addiction issues that that's we're right. seeing. And that's where I come in with a healthcare lens. With yeah. Yeah.
As a healthcare professional.
Yeah. And especially with my, you know, I specialize in HIV. So, you know, I'm not going to generalize and say everyone with HIV gets into drugs or things like that. But I meet of such course. A wide variety, you know, a big population.
And well, and that's a big risk factor, is it not?
Yes. Because oh, definitely.
Needle use. Yes. And according to police, we're seeing a lot. And maybe Eli Arnold has talked about this as a bike cop with Portland Police Bureau. He's running for District 4 for City Council. But I, according to the police, because they have been cracking down more on fentanyl throughout downtown and these pills that people were smoking or eating or what, mostly smoking on foil and straws, thank you, Multnomah County, mm-hmm. they're apparently injecting it now because it's weaker and the dealers are not as mm-hmm. concentrated in downtown. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard anything about that.
I'm always trying to keep my eye on it. And I know we have like a lot of, you know, we have a lot of people that inject drugs and yes. actually Multnomah.
Well, we do regardless. I mean, there's just needles everywhere, even if we were seeing less of them for a minute.
Multnomah County actually has an increase right now, just if you look at the numbers in HIV cases.
Really?
Yes. And it's especially in young people like 18 to 28.
Oh, that's terrible.
Which
oh,
is really terrible. Sad. Oh, yeah. Terrible. And I don't think it's just, you know, I don't think it's just, you know, having unsafe sex. I think a lot of it is injectable use and drug use, which is just resulting in issues.
And so what would you say to, like, Jessica Vega Peterson, who's the county chair, what would you say to her if she said, well, Sandy, that is why I'm funding, and they are, I mean, they've got a lot of money in needles mm-hmm. and harm reduction. I mean, actually, that's where all their money is. Under the budget, really, all of it, very little yes. is going to, yeah, very treatment. Little is going to detox and rehab and trying to get off drugs. Mm-hmm. So would you, I guess she would say, well, yes, we're focused on that because we want to prevent disease. Mm-hmm. So is your argument what, that yes, prevention of disease is just one part of a continuum of care?
Definitely. But I think we, you know, we're talking about two different things.
Yes, we
like
are.
With HIV, I would say the populace needs to be educated about what's happening. I don't think the media is talking about it. I don't think anybody's talking about how we're having this boom of cases of HIV, especially in young people. Right?
You know, it's that's actually weird that they're not talking about it. Because if I were the county, I would have a banner out about that mm-hmm. and about how, hey, we were ahead of this because we've been passing out needles since the dawn of time.
Yes. And it's not even about passing out needles at this point, right? We have medications like PrEP, you know, Truvada, that prevent people from getting HIV.
Is the county passing out PrEP?
They are not.
Gosh, they should.
Yeah,
they?
They're not. And I think actually, as a matter of fact, our HIV like clinic, that like our main PrEP clinic that was in the county, they closed it down.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It was weird.
When
it was
like this?
During that kind of COVID era when
oh,
we were coming
terrible.
Out of it. But I still don't understand that just as a healthcare practitioner. Like,
is
why
it cost
would they do
preventative?
It?
We've got tons of money. Is it expensive?
It's not expensive, you know, like the state can very well pay for it, especially for young people.
Why isn't that something we're handing out? Can people take it without risks?
They can take it without risks.
So they
can
just
take
it prophylactically?
They can take it prophylactically, yeah. It's like basically a
Gosh,
pill a day
that
prevents HIV, right?
A pill a day. Well, that's, mm-hmm. okay, so you'd have to, so what is the standard practice? If you're engaged in harm reduction in a city that includes PrEP as part of its harm reduction practice, are they handing out what, packets of 30 and then you come back once a month? Is that the idea?
They're probably handing out packets of 30. They're also educating them on like the different, you know, you can do, there's like a 2-1-1 step as well. Like you can take 2 and then 1 and okay. 1 if you're having unprotected sex. There's all sorts of treatments. And now we're actually just starting a new treatment. A new kind of PrEP is going to be coming onto service, oh. which is an injectable that you just get twice a year.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm like, well, I
when
hope.
When is that coming?
I believe
board?
They're just wrapping up the studies. I've been reading
oh
the
boy.
Studies.
So possibly a little bit.
It's coming
it's gonna,
out.
And it has to have FDA approval.
I believe it just got their go-ahead from
oh, it
the
did.
FDA.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would roll out maybe late 2025?
Probably. And I think I think that even might be early 2025 too, which I think is great. They're using it for treatment. And I treated one of the patients here in Portland, in Oregon, one of the first patients I did with the injectable. And I just had a conversation with him the other day.
That's great.
And he's like, yeah, it worked.
Okay. But we don't have, so it sounds like nobody's talking about this as a public health emergency.
Mm-mm.
In addition to, obviously, addiction and clearly as a side effect, a huge risk factor
mm-hmm.
that goes along with addiction.
Passing out needles and addiction. And even when we talk about addiction,
injectable drugs, yeah.
How can you allow someone to be addicted to fentanyl for the rest of their lives?
I know.
How can we say that's okay? How can we say that
and
a
we've
person...
we've done that. As a county, we've
been
done
doing that.
That.
Yeah, so that's what I would tell.
How do you communicate
JBP?
With the county? Would you get out of that? Would you get out of that joint office if you were a city councilor? Would you vote to,
yes.
to just eject yourself altogether
yes.
from the joint office?
Yes, I believe, and I think that the taxpayers need to finally hear
I agree with you.
That they have not done anything with our money or just squandered it, pissed it away with nonprofits that they've given all this free money to. Like, and it turns out, you know, we're seeing this unfold in the media right now.
Right.
These nonprofits are run by friends of a friend or a lover or whatever.
Yes.
And they're just part of the grift train and getting all this free money and they're not producing results. I'll even talk about this one step further. Street roots, right? They hand out, they, you know, have homeless people give away
newspapers.
And I actually stopped and I talked to
a gentleman. And the newspaper's called Street Roots.
It's called Street
Roots. Publication.
Yes. And you buy it for a dollar. So there was a gentleman sitting outside of Trader Joe's and I was like, hey, so I have a question for you. And he's like, what's up? And I was just like, how much do they pay you a day to hand out these newspapers? And he was like, well, I make like $30 a day. And I was like, so these nonprofits are collecting millions of dollars and the people on these boards are probably advocates of everybody having a living wage.
And a house
and healthcare. And this person that they think that they're providing help for doesn't even have healthcare, isn't making a living wage. I mean, $30 a day is unacceptable. And is not getting any care.
But that's what, so, I mean, it's not funny, haha, but I mean, it kind of is because it's so absurd. I think, wouldn't they argue, Sandeep, you should pay for those things. We shouldn't.
I mean, why are they
the
making
for
all
profits,
those salaries? You know?
I think they would say, well, we're really, I don't know.
I'll say they hate corporations, so.
That's right. The sentiment, I think from that side of the political spectrum is that businesses, private businesses bad,
mm-hmm.
nonprofit businesses good,
mm-hmm.
and overall the with the exception I would say of two commissioners, Myron and Brim Edwards, the county has echoed this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually
and until
perverse.
Recently, I think the city has too.
Mm-hmm.
Until the last couple of years, really, until. Well, I'd say until the election of 2020, the city has also echoed that.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because just with my campaign, I think I was the first one to come out and just point to statistics of saying the Joint Office of Homeless Services has spent or has collected $1 billion
with a B.
Yeah. And then it's like right after that, we have these statements from our council members, you know, saying like we need to cut ourselves off from the Joint Office of Homeless Services. And it's just interesting for me to watch how this is all playing out.
Right. So that's the majority council, Mingus Maps and Renee Gonzalez and Dan Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And Wheeler and Rubio, my understanding are saying, let's stay with the status quo, stay the course.
Yes. And I think, it's Renee, Dan Ryan, and Mingus are saying we need to pull out.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Or at least like, okay, you're not in compliance with the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to have to, start taking steps toward that end because we've already entered into an agreement. You're supposed to be doing these things and you're not meeting benchmarks.
Mm-hmm. Which is like, yeah, we the taxpayer want to know, like, there hasn't been a dent in homelessness. There hasn't been a dent
in increasing.
Mental health. It's increasing.
It's all getting worse.
And so where's all of, you know, I am a middle class person. I go to work every day. you know, and I'm being taxed out of my brain. And so that's fine. But I'm like, I'm not seeing any of the results. We have potholes all over the place. We have homeless all over. We don't have median income housing. Where is all that money going? Where did it go?
Yeah, I think for people filing individually, your tax, marginal tax rate is the same as New Yorkers making $25 million or more, and all you have to do is make $150,000 if you're filing individually, which I know is a lot of money, but also in just as far as Portland Metro goes, is I mean, there are professions that hit that in the trades.
Professions. Definitely.
And there are government workers that hit that. I mean, plumbers, electricians, people within city government, people, a fair amount of people who have high school educations, like, I think who wouldn't be considered white collar, and they're paying that same rate.
Yeah, and you really...
For what?
For what?
And I think they'd be happy to if they saw something.
Yes, I think they would be happy to like, a vibrant city. Right. You know, like a vibrant city.
Or even just a functional one.
Yes, or even just a functional one.
I like the idea of a vibrant one.
Yeah.
But so besides doing things like pulling out of the Joint Office of Homeless Services, what would you do as a city councilor? Because you're going to be part of this legislative body if you win, and you're going to be passing policy. You won't be in charge of a bureau, which is what we have now. We've got all these people in charge of bureaus sort of operating in silos. So what are your policies in regard to crime and homelessness? Like, you keep that, okay, the city keeps the money, it would otherwise have flushed down the toilet with the county. What does it do with that money?
Right. That's where I want to really come in and look at where is that money going, and specifically with our homeless issue, because it is mental health, because it is substance abuse. It's like, we need to at least get people a baseline, you know, mental health evaluation. We need to get people at least a baseline, like, substance abuse evaluation.
You're talking about street homeless.
Street homeless, yes, absolutely.
Because in order to triage their needs?
I think the best thing would be, and this comes back to, you know, we've been wasting our money by giving it to nonprofits. And what I've been saying is, like, why don't we give that money to hospitals? We have nonprofit hospitals. I've worked in hospitals, you know, and we're going to need long-term care here in Portland, because at some point when you've done meth for five years, 6 years, or fentanyl,
and been revived a number of times, and you have brain death.
Right, you have brain death, and you can't actually have a standard of living on your own. And I've seen this. I've worked in long-term care.
What do you see? Talk about that.
I was in geriatric care for a while, and I with Providence, and it was end of life care as well, so it was more like when hospice someone gets old, hospice,
palliative, they call it.
And it was an eye opening thing for me to see, like, end of life. Quite honestly, you know,
from addiction,
not from addiction, just from getting old.
Oh sure, yes,
from getting old,
terminal disease.
I have seen. Like, I interned at the CCC, Central City Concern, when I was a pharmacy student.
And for people who don't know, what is Central City Concern?
It's basically a nonprofit clinic here in town, and they take on the healthcare of a lot of the homeless population and anybody who, I believe, like, basically
street medicine
has. Yes.
Really?
Really.
But they have a clinic. It's also mobile, isn't it? I mean, do they go to the streets?
I believe they do, because I see their cars everywhere.
I do too.
Yeah, they must be going to the streets. And I've seen them kind of at, you know, sweeps or cleanups of the city too. So they are involved in that, I want to say, but I'm not 100% sure.
And I hate how people call it sweeps. Like, it just seems like it's a disruption of an open-air drug market and sex trafficking operation.
Right.
Why can't we just call it, and frankly, asylum? Unregulated asylum. I mean, an insane asylum, really. Why can't we just call it what it is?
Yes. And we're not really sweeping somebody off the street. We're actually providing them with care.
An exit ramp. If we could. I mean, part of the criticism, is that we just don't, we're not offering these people, we don't have good options to give them, because we can't, even if they want to get off drugs, we can't send them anywhere that's not full most of the time.
Yeah.
We can't get them a bed.
Yes.
So if you're on city council, how do we expand that, knowing that in general, the county is supposed to be in charge of things like mental health, addiction, all of those things, how do we, I mean, can the city, and, you know, Kezia talked about this when she came on, which is, she was just like, we've got all these projects that are earmarked for things, and then we have a general fund, and most of that goes to public safety. So how do we fund these projects without increasing taxes?
Right. We're going to have to really look at the money that we have.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of money that we're sitting on, and a lot of money that we've given away or lost. And we're going to have to, you know, we obviously collect taxes every year. We continue to. So we're going to have to look at that money and say, where are we going to funnel this money now so that it makes most sense for us and we have results? That's been the issue with harm reduction, right? It's like so easy to say you're treating people by giving them, you know, foils and syringes. And when you give somebody a foil.
Yes, the disease of addiction. But in regard to like HIV, I mean, needle exchanges, well, we're not doing needle exchange. Do the needle handouts that the county's doing, does that work? I mean, it's got a, does it make a dent?
You know, the county would say yes.
I don't know, because they're not, they don't give us those numbers, so I don't know. The numbers they do give us are not independently checked in any kind of way. I mean, usually when they, obviously, almost always when the auditor comes out with something about Multnomah County, and I, you know, there's a lot of questions about the auditor, frankly, city and county, about what's going on with all of them. But all that said, generally with audits of Multnomah County, they're coming out saying, well, actually, it's not what the county says. It's worse than what the county says it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we can, we just don't have data. It'd be nice to collect that data.
From a
public health perspective, it's probably important to have clean needles.
Yes.
In addition to other things.
You should definitely have clean needles, but is it helping somebody? I'm going to say hard no.
Really?
I mean, I've seen.
Is it helping them avoid HIV?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so, because, you know, if it really was, would we really see an increase in it? And Hep C is also the other piece of this, right? We also have Hep C, and we also see all these.
Why isn't that going down with the amount of needles being that we're consumed? Mm-hmm. That's our focus, mm-hmm. and we can't even do that right,
mm-hmm.
or it just doesn't work. It's going up.
Yeah, I mean, just think you have an addict. I mean, I think this is a disconnect, and I'm just kind of coming to this, but. When you have an addiction, you're like, I see a needle on the floor.
Yeah, I'm just
gonna
pick
got
it up.
Some, you know, whatever substance. Maybe I'll use a flame to clean it, and you do it. And
what
you
does
don't
the national
care.
Data say? Does it say that? Is there reliable data that say that needle maybe ours don't work, and we don't have a needle exchange? Is there any reliable data that says handing needles out works handing needles out to drug addicts works to prevent?
It's a really good question, and I'm going to err on the side of saying no. I think this has been a message have all been fed about. I'm sure I'm going to get it.
We'd have to look because we know that the Drug Policy Alliance is publishing things in medical journals, and that's the interest group. That's the out-of-state Soros, George Soros-funded far-left interest group that brought us the Trojan horse of Measure 110.
Right.
The decriminalization of all drugs.
Right.
So we also have to look at who's authoring these quote-unquote studies and figure out what kind of an interest they have in it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's disclosed in these journals. And sometimes, as I learned when Josh Marquis came on my show, it's not, the former DA in Clatsop County. He pointed that out to me, and I was kind of blown away to see that there was a journal that had not red flagged who was doing a study about the decriminalization of drugs. I mean, that was concerning.
It's a big wake-up call, I think, for the general public, and I'll make another example about this just as a pharmacist. I read so many studies about new drugs that are coming out, you know, what the effects are on the body, and in 2024, and I've just been on this one drug lately, but... talking about the issues with the drug. And I'm like, in 2024, the FDA, believe it or not, everyone, makes mistakes. And they will approve a medication that in the long run is not going to be good for somebody or is harmful or all the data is not presented in a truthful way. So then, you know, for me growing up, getting educated in pharmacy and having a scientific background, we were always taught question the data. question the journal.
Okay.
Who paid for the journal?
So that was part of your pharmacological education.
Yes. It was the number one. It was like, yeah, Pacific, it was Journal Club. I'm sure every single health practitioner out there has heard of Journal Club. And you dissect a journal to death and you try to figure out
a medical journal
and why, what are the like issues that can come up? What are some questions here? And as scientists, we're always taught test the hypothesis.
So you're rigorously looking at
it. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I found one just as of recent and I brought it up with a pharmaceutical company and they're, you know, they're trying to make a change and I can't represent their product morally because they have not made that change yet.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So looking at things in Portland through that healthcare lens that you do, What are your policies? Like, yes, you have to look at the budget and figure out where the city's money is going. And then once you've done that, what's next? What's your next step?
It's going to be treatment first. And that sounds like a very easy thing, but I think it's going to be a big project.
So are you going to try to implement policy that involves the city opening up rehabs and detoxes? Because we need more.
That's a good question. Yeah, we do need more. And I guess I'm looking at this with my lens of the city, which is a little fogged, which I feel like they're not capable of doing something like that right now. But then maybe when I'm on the team, or if I'm elected into office.
Well, the county's certainly not capable of it. I mean, they're who's going to do it?
That's the big question. Somebody has to flip and do this. Yeah, my brother and I, we talk about this. We're both pharmacists, and he...
Oh, interesting. Your twin?
Yeah, we kind of ended up that way. Yeah.
Where does he live?
He used to live in Portland.
Oh, wow.
And
oh, wow.
He has kids.
Is he identical?
We're fraternal.
Okay.
They just moved to Vancouver.
So there's not two exact copies of you walking around?
No, But okay. We kind of look similar, but not really.
We're like brother. More like brothers then. Yeah.
Exactly. But we talk about these things and we're, you know, he's a big project manager. I have been a big project manager. And we talk about like, if we take treatment to the city, what is that going to look like? And I still think it's going to look like putting our efforts and combining our efforts with hospital systems and really making that where someone can go get evaluated, get checked, get off of drugs.
So this maybe the city funds a hospital system that puts this together.
Yes. And hospital systems, which with my experience already have CEOs, they already have HR, they have accountability because as soon as they don't meet benchmarks, they're not getting funded.
And I'm assuming that part of your platform would be accountability.
Absolutely.
Of the dollars that you are spending.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And transparency.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to talk with, you know, the Oregon Health Authority. I would love to talk with, you know, local hospitals, nonprofit hospitals, even clinics.
I mean, you'd have
clinics,
to. You would have to.
To just,
and you'd have to work with them all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm ready to do that and bring my healthcare lens to it and say like, okay, how are we're not going down harm reduction anymore. We're going towards treatment first and we're putting an end to people living in chemical comas on the street. Like, it's done. We're not doing it anymore. That's true compassion, I think.
What else would you do? Like, in regard to... So, are your top two priorities addiction and homelessness, then?
Mm-hmm. Public safety
as
well.
And those all overlap. And then what do you do in regard to public safety? What is your policy or plan there?
Yeah, so I've talked...
Because that's one thing the city does have control over.
Yes.
Is Portland Police Bureau and Fire and BOAC, mm-hmm. the Bureau of Emergency Communications.
And we need all of those things, I think, to be a successful city.
We do.
We have just seen a decline in public safety, which is unfortunate. I think we're getting better, but we're not quite there yet. I talked to so many police officers and, you know, initially I was like, why can we not get any police officers like to continue to come to Portland? You know, like just asking that question.
Have you done a ride along?
Yeah. I mean, I have.
So now you know.
Yeah. And I've seen their cars that look like, you know, they're just beat to, they look like they came from Venezuela, you know, like they're not looking good. So I think really the officers that I talked to, they say the biggest issue is the stigma in Portland that officers are
culture,
bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cultural issue.
Do you think that you can help change that? I mean, I do think it's changing because according to the polling, most Portlanders want police.
Yes.
And certainly in your district, I think there's a contingent of people that are multiple repeated crime victims. I guess people more privileged people might call it petty crime, but you know, windows broken out of their cars,
their businesses,
catalytic converter, and they're not. They're besieged by crime in a way that it's affecting their daily life.
Exactly.
And they're tired of replacing the iPhone and the windows and the tires
and
getting their car stolen, and they're tired of it.
I think that's going to be a true two-prong thing. We're headed down the right path because we did vote in Nathan Vasquez as a DA, which I'm really excited about.
The culture is changing.
Like, that was part of, you know, I'm proud of Portland for doing that. We didn't go down the Mike Schmidt road for 4 more years, but it's also going to be okay. So we have Nathan there kind of guarding that, but now we need to have, you know,
we need to work with him as a system.
We need
partner
to work with him, yes.
And figure out what he needs. And
exactly.
And obviously, make sure he's funded by the county, but like, how can the city support him?
Yes.
How do we support police and Bureau of Emergency Communications, et cetera, to support him?
Mm-hmm.
And all work together.
Exactly what I was going to say, work together. And I've met Nathan several times, and I really like him. And I think he's so good at just, like, keeping accountability, making sure we, again, worry about the victims, which is so important. We for some reason, lost that.
We did.
Which
doesn't make sense. I think he has a good balance of, I certainly don't think he's got any kind of over-aggression in him in regard to incarceration or prosecutorial aggressiveness that would go above and beyond any sort of legal boundary or any sort of reasonable measure. I mean, he seems pretty interested in, like, everybody does better if we can rehabilitate criminals.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think Nathan is candid about that, but I think he's also focused on keeping people who need to be incarcerated, getting them incarcerated and trying to keep them there.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong
with that.
To protect
the public.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
We have to.
Yeah, we absolutely have to. I mean,
people don't feel safe. I mean, obviously there's things we can look at, and I think Kevin Barton, the DA in Washington County, talks about this really fluently, which is there's the public perception about whether you're safe, and then there's data about whether people are actually safe, but it really does need to be both.
Mm-hmm.
And post 2020, the data is not great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they say it's getting better. It's not good.
Mm-mm.
It's not where we want to be.
No.
And certainly, but also people don't feel safe. They don't.
They don't feel safe at all in Portland. I mean, last night, I will say, it's like the first time I actually felt safe in Portland, but there were still moments of unsafety.
The first time since when? Because you must have felt safe at some point because you moved here and started your life here.
I felt very safe in Portland. And when I came to Portland, it was like 2009. And then I actually moved into Portland in 2012. I lived close to PSU. And I was, you know, young student, and I remember being like at CC's, and it's the end of the night, and I would walk from CC's to, you know, 11th and Clay at night, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock by myself, you know, and I felt totally fine.
I remember I used to do those walks too. As a single female.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or from downtown into Northwest or vice versa.
I'm still a little cautious.
I don't do it during the day.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, during the day.
I don't do it during the day.
Yeah. Then that's not what it should be like. It should not be like that. Yeah. I was at the Brat concert last night. Charlie XCX. It was really good. Troy Sivan was like really good. I enjoyed him so much. It's like the lighting was fabulous.
Like, so much fun. Where was it?
It was at the Moda Center, and it was sold out. And it was.
Did you take
so
transit? I used to take transit back and forth. Did you take the MAX?
Yeah. So getting there just like took.
I mean,
Uber.
That's always the best way to do it.
Yeah.
If you can do it, I mean, if it's a functional. We need functional public safety because that is really the best way to get in and out of that Moda Center.
Yes, and honestly, that's what we did to get into Chinatown because we were going to go to CC's and Badlands for like the after party. So like the Moda Center just cleared out.
Right.
There's filled with young people, just everybody
having fun.
And that's it. Just I was so happy for the city in that moment.
Positive.
There was a MAX car that was, you know, out of service, And all of us, like, you know, young people and everybody were just waiting at the Max car. And I asked the guy, I was like, is he going to, like, let us onto the train and take us across the river? And the guy that works for PBOT, who was just, you know, maintaining everything there, he was like, he talked to the driver. They let us on,
wow,
even though the car was not in service.
Okay.
And we crossed over the river and we got to Batlands in Chinatown. And it was fantastic. And I have a photo, but it's just like, the car was filled with young people, and I just had this moment of like, this is what Portland should be. I'm going to.
You should.
I'm going to.
I think it would make me happy. Like, yeah. I would like to say that. I think it would make people happy.
It was just like a really awesome moment where it's just like, thank you for opening up this streetcar that's not in service, and this, you know, this driver's probably going home after a long day, but all these kids are just like crammed in there. And everybody feels safe, and they're smiling, and they're having a good time, and they're all headed to the gay clubs on the west side from the Moda Center. It was just really cool to experience that.
That is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Sandy, what else do we need to know, or what else do you want people to know about you?
Ooh, I'm like trying to think. We have covered so much.
I know. It's been fun.
It has been fun.
I knew
fun.
It would be. Andy Chandler kept asking me over and over again when you were going to come on because he couldn't wait. He kept saying he couldn't wait to hear it because he knew I would like you so much.
Oh, I had this feeling too that we were just going to meet and just have a conversation and talk about like everything.
Which we did, yeah.
Which is just, it's what I like doing, you know?
And you're good at it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. What do I tell, like, what else do I have to add? Really, we've gone over the policies and everything. I'm looking forward to the campaign to being over.
Yeah. Oh, I think we are. I'd like to FF to to November 6th.
Yes, please.
I think we're all tired.
We're all tired. I think, I mean, even yourself,
you've probably been interviewing. Exhausted.
I'm exhausted. It's like, I feel like my body is kind of breaking down a little bit towards the
end. And you would know, because as a health professional, you're probably like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, no, I can't fall apart here. I can't. I'm feeling physical symptoms.
Yes, exactly.
How do you do that? Like, what is your advice for other candidates out there who are having to manage all of this stress and adrenaline and cortisol and probably bad habits out on the campaign trail and bad food and no sleep? And what do you...
You know, I wave through it. I'm not going to lie. It's like the last 2 days I've been eating Taco Bell nonstop.
Andy and I love Taco Bell.
I do too. And I'm
what do you order there?
I was saying this to Andy. It's like everyone in Portland's going to know my order now. Ask. It's like the Mexican pizza, bean burrito with sour cream,
and a crunchy, right?
It's just so easy.
Crunchy taco.
Crunchy taco supreme.
Delicious.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
It's just, yeah. What about you?
Well, I like the taco supreme, crunchy. I usually do the bean and cheese burrito, but I'm going to start adding sour cream because that's one of the best parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I do pintos and cheese.
Ooh, nice.
And then I get a bunch of the hot sauce and I squeeze that. It's so disgusting. I squeeze the hot sauce onto the top and sometimes mix it, sometimes not.
Yes, the hot sauce is good.
Sometimes just let it sit there like a dulce de leche or something.
I mean, everybody has their ways. It's such a nice meal. It's such a nice meal.
What do you get to drink? Do you ever do the Baja Blast?
I have done that one time. My brother got it for me.
Is it good or is it disgusting?
It was good in the moment. I was dehydrated. And my brother was like, I was actually dehydrated and I had passed out. This is like during the campaign like trail.
Oh no. So it was like an IV.
It was literally, he was like, I called him and I was like, I passed out twice. And my friends were with me, luckily.
That is concerning.
Literally, you passed out. I was in my home, luckily, because I was just entertaining.
What happened? You got dehydrated?
I got dehydrated.
Oh, is it in the summer?
It was in the summer. Okay. It was
not
like
enough water.
Stress
you need to carry
of the
around
campaign.
Stanley or whatever the kids these days.
Yeah. But I did have the Baja.
The Baja Blast.
And it was good. I had it in bed and I enjoyed myself.
Rehydrating, right?
I mean, it saved the day.
Gatorade,
in that moment.
Pedialyte, or the Baja.
Right,
Blast. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a little hack. It's a little hack. I will say for all the candidates out there, you know, it's so important to take care of yourself right now. We're towards the end of the race, and it's like, you know, have some self-care for yourself. And I do that for myself a lot more now towards the end of the race than I did in the middle of the race. It's like ballots are out. People's opinions are made. Some people are going to be swayed. But make sure you really take care of yourself, because things can get really difficult if you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and without, I think we all lose sight of this, and I certainly do too, but like without you, there is nothing. So if right. you don't take care of yourself, the whole thing that you're staying up all night for, or mm-hmm. you're racing around for and not drinking water for is mm-hmm. over. You won't accomplish those.
Yes. Oh. And it's so correct. And it's like, for me, I
but
had to
forget that.
Go through that moment to realize yeah. like, oh my God, I'm not taking care of myself.
Okay. Well, Sandy, Polly, thank you for coming in. It's so nice to finally meet you.
Thank you for having me on.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And please come back after the election. Regardless, please come back.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Thank you.